And now, America's number one show on pop culture and politics. This is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. Progress, really, progress, dramatic progress. They have now selected half a jury. How about that? Isn't that amazing? We're talking about the Trump hush money trial. We've never had a president before with a hush money trial. We've never had a president before with the example of hush money. There's a reflection on this by historian Douglas Brinkley. He's a professor at Rice University. We will get to that in a moment. We'll also get to this new analysis that says that it's really easy to pigeonhole people and who they're going to vote for based upon their religious behavior, how often they go to church, and so forth. It all is remarkable. And more about the pro-Hamas protesters who are making, well, idiots of themselves. And I do believe creating a tremendous wave of hostility. No, I don't think that Senator Tom Cotton has the right idea. I don't believe that people should take the matters into their own hands or throw them off bridges or anything else that Senator Cotton suggested, though I understand the sentiments. Okay, the first six jurors were seated this afternoon in Donald Trump's hush money trial in New York City. This is the beginning of the process of assembling a group that will weigh the criminal charges against the former president. Potential jurors have faced courtroom questioning for most of the day. They've been quizzed about a range of topics, including their media consumption, in other words, what cable channels they watch, and their perspectives on Trump, who is in court observing this process. The judge admonished Trump on Tuesday afternoon for speaking while a potential juror was questioned. This goes forward. They still need to select six more jurors out of the 1.4 million people who live in Manhattan. And what's at stake? CNN says what's at stake. Trump is the first former president in U.S. history to go to criminal trial. His legal challenges come as he juggles the campaign and courtroom as the 2024 presumptive GOP nominee. The hush money case may be the only case to actually face a jury before the election. And Trump could face jail time. I believe it's up to 4 years if convicted. 4 years? How long is presidential term? I think it's extremely unlikely that he will be actually forced to do a hard time. People are speculating he could go to Rikers Island. I think that's far-fetched. There, meanwhile, is this piece about the likelihood of people voting for Trump. And it's a piece by Danny Westneat. We've invited him on the show. But he writes under the heading, "In politics, one thing rules above all, religion." And he writes that he was intrigued when the pollster YouGov, in combination with The Economist magazine, decided to take pigeonholing to a whole different level. They put out a vast model of voting characteristics in an effort to typecast the political identities of Americans. It's the combination of more than 100,000 poll respondents over the past 2 years aimed at forecasting how every imaginable demographic variable contributes to who we are politically and to how we express that through our votes. In this database world, and he then fesses up, he says, "I am not, it turns out, a communist." He He talked in the past about people accusing him of being a communist. As he says, it turns out that I am not, it turns out, a communist. I am a straight white man, aged 55 to 64, from a city in Washington State, who is atheist or agnostic and has a college degree. That's all the model needs to know to predict my politics in the presidential election, according to the modelers. It forecasts that I'm about 80% to 90% likely to vote for Democrat Joe Biden, and only about 10% to 20% likely to vote for Republican Donald Trump. What's fascinating or alarming about the data is how locked in America's political tribalism appears to be. Demography really is destiny. A policy scarcely matters. And one wonders if free thought is on the endangered list too. On the right-to-left spectrum, for example, the Trumpiest voter possible is described as a straight white man, aged 75 plus, from rural Oklahoma, who is evangelical and didn't finish college. That guy is 90% likely to vote for Trump. Now, this is not an exaggeration or an insult. This is just the way that these numbers turn out. Meanwhile, if you are a lesbian Asian woman, aged 25 to 34, from a city in California, who is an atheist and has a college degree, it's over. You're voting for Biden. It's 99% certain, according to the data. Now, somebody has to go out and search for such a person, for a lesbian Asian woman in the right age group, and find one who is pro-Trump. Who maybe in fact they could feature her as a background crowd in those rallies. There's been a lot of talk about divides in politics, writes Danny Westneat, such as gender, racial or urban-rural gaps. And it's true. Where you live or what your educational level is or your ethnicity goes a long way toward forming your political preferences. But what stands out with this huge new data set is how one thing above all others, and then he quotes from what they report, although race is often cited as the central cleavage in America, the single most powerful predictor of voting intention is religion. That's what The Economist noted, the magazine that sponsored this survey. A model that knows nothing save for respondents' religious affiliation can correctly identify which of the two leading candidates they prefer 62% of the time. And what that means is that if you take me, for instance, a straight white man from a city in Washington, who is atheistic or agnostic with a college degree and simply made me Catholic instead, I, or rather my voter type, would instantly shift about 30 points more Republican. I'd go from 10% to 20% likely to vote for Trump to 48% Trump, 52% Biden. I'd be a swing voter. If you made me evangelical, I'd move 60 points to the right and be a solid Trump voter. Coming up after the break, there's a clip of a dismissed juror who described what it was like being in the courtroom seeing Trump. How did she describe that experience? That coming up next.
Your outlet for outrage.
It is outrageous what you are saying.
The Michael Medved Show.
This is outrageous.
More of Michael Medved in a moment.
Hey And on the Michael Medved show, we're just finishing up with this new survey from YouGov and The Economist magazine about the strongest determinant they found compared to where you live, to your profession, to your educational level, to your ethnicity. None of that is important as how religious you are. And what's fascinating about it is their numbers indicate it doesn't matter what religion you are. It matters how often you go to church, how important you think religion is to you. For instance, Danny Westneat, in his column about this study, says that in the exit polls for the last statewide elections in 2022, 34% of the voters in Washington state answered none when asked for their religion. This makes the a-religious by far the largest religious group in the state. Coming in second were Protestants at 19%, with Catholics at 13%. In other words, then you have 34%, a full third, who said they have no religion. Is there something about actually sitting through liturgy regularly and trying to draw closer to the creator of the universe that somehow makes you more Republican or makes you more oriented toward Trump? What's fascinating to me about that is it's ironic, because if you have Trump versus Biden, I'm not to say that he is some kind of deep religious scholar or saintly figure or anything of that kind, but he does have a history of being a fairly serious church-going, communion-taking Catholic. And President Trump, not so much. I mean, he's admitted that he isn't so big on church attendance. He'll go to churches and to religious settings to campaign. And yet the impulse of religiously minded people to back Trump is apparently very, very profound. Trump's decision to start hawking Bibles, just a hunch, writes Westneat, that's probably not going to land well here in the state of Washington. But it's possible he knows what he's doing when it comes to certain swing states. As The Economist noted, the more importance someone places on religion, the more likely they are to be a Trump voter. Godliness is next to Trumpiness, unquote. And he's right now going through a trial about paying hush money to a porn star who says that she got that $130,000 to keep quiet about a sexual tryst. And by the way, a majority of Americans believe that Trump is not telling the truth when he says, oh, there is anything ever between us. I mean, there are photographs and other material. Meanwhile, at the trial, jury selection in the first criminal trial continued. This time they had more success. They had a pool with hundreds of potential jurors slowly being winnowed down to just 12 people and six alternates who will have all the power in making the final decision. Kara McGee is a woman in cybersecurity is her field. And she was dismissed from the prospective jury pool for job-related reasons. She spoke to MSNBC about the experience of seeing Trump in person and interacting with him in the courtroom. Listen.
My feet.
What was that like answering questions, including some about Donald Trump, as he is sitting 30 feet from you?
It was odd. It was such an interesting experience because it's I had never seen him in person before, you know, and you see someone blown up so larger than life on the media for so many years. To see them in person is very jarring. And you get the sense that it's like, oh, this is just another guy. And also he sees me talking about him, which is bizarre.
Did you make eye contact with him?
Yes. Yeah.
At what point? What was that?
I believe right before I started to read off the questionnaire and right after I finished, before I got up to go when I was dismissed.
Did it add another level of nervousness or tension that you felt with him sitting there?
I think so. It made the whole thing feel more real in a way, because I guess when you're on any jury, it's you have elements of that person's future in your hands.
And this is a person whose future is, to some extent, will have an impact on the nation's future and on your future. The process will continue, but now that they're moving forward, does seem as if they're going to end up with a jury and maybe even a functional jury. Speaking of functional, we played before a brief excerpt from comments by Thomas Massey, the congressman from Kentucky, who was asked Speaker Mike Johnson of Louisiana, has asked him to resign his job as Speaker of the House of the United States. And Mike Johnson had this to say, and this on the same day that he is pushing for a full Senate trial of only the second cabinet member in all of American history to be impeached. And that impeachment, by the way, never went for the previous impeachment of Secretary of War Belknap in the Grant administration. That never happened because he resigned before they could bring him to trial. In any event, this is what Speaker Johnson has to say about his own resignation or potential resignation.
I am not resigning, and it is, in my view, an absurd notion that someone would bring a vacate motion when we are simply here trying to do our jobs. It is not helpful to the cause. It is not helpful to the country. It does not help the House Republicans advance our agenda, which is in the best interest of the American people here, a secure border, sound governance. And it's not helpful to the unity that we have in the body.
Okay, no, it's not helpful. And I agree with him. And I do think that Mike Johnson is trying to do a decent job in one of the toughest jobs in Washington, being Speaker with such a... But when he says we're just trying to do our jobs, is there some evidence that that Mayorkas, who was appointed by the president and is supposed to represent the president's point of view, was doing something other than trying to do his job? We'll be right back. And on the Michael Medved show, it's not only the United States that has a difficult time politically with a shaky government. And what I mean by shaky is not that the government's about to fall, but that this is a government like the government in Israel that is facing, like the government in Britain, like the government in Canada, that is facing a very tough bid for re-election. And this despite the fact that there was a brand new New York Times, Siena University poll, and it appeared under the heading, The Race Tightens. President Biden trims Trump's margin in latest survey. In latest survey, President solidifies support of his base and trims Trump's lead. Well, all of that going on, we can talk about later. But there is a major politician who, in the midst of this polarizing and sometimes paralyzing political system, a major politician who suggested banning all weekend car use. Why? For the sake of meeting proposed emissions quotas. You think that it would go down well here in the United States to ban any use of automobiles on the weekend? Look, it's probably it's easiest in the country if you're Orthodox observant and Jewish, because at least on one of the weekend days, the Friday night through Saturday night, you don't drive in automobiles. But to have the government enforce that? Really? Okay, Germany's transport minister has suggested banning weekend car use for the sake of meeting proposed emissions quotas. The two-day-a-week ban on personal use of the car, as well as new speed limits, are being considered as part of an effort to reduce Germany's carbon footprint in the latest example of governments trying to control people for the sake of green targets. The transport minister in Deutschland, in Germany, Volker Wissing, a member of the supposedly pro-free market FDP party, made the remarks in relation to an impending new piece of onerous climate legislation, the Climate Protection Act, warning that the restrictions on personal car use could be implemented if alternative amendments were not made. Comprehensive and indefinite driving bans on Saturdays and Sundays are being considered. Wissing admitted all of this as Germany's coalition government struggles to set emission cuts per sector under the proposed new climate legislation. Germany's already facing the prospect of destroying its native auto industry with plans to ban new combustion engines after 2035. Meanwhile, green austerity has already prompted a fight back from farmers. Under the terms of the Climate Protection Act, the German economy will have to cut 22 million metric tons of carbon emissions per year. Wissing told radio station Deutschlandfunk that such large quantities can only be saved ad hoc by not using cars and trucks. So problems aren't unique or distinctive and restricted here to the United States. Meanwhile, some of the problems we have, John Fetterman, who has been the surprising leading supporter of the State of Israel and its struggle against Islamic terrorists. John Fetterman just posted this. He posted part of that video we played earlier in the show of protesters trying to disrupt Starbucks to boost the cause of Hamas. And Senator Fetterman said, "I don't know who needs to hear this, but blocking a bridge or berating folks in Starbucks isn't righteous. It just makes you a beep." Right there, thank you very much. "Demand Hamas to send every hostage back home and surrender." And I posted this video, and he posted the video of pro-Palestinian protesters entering a Starbucks in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and chanting. Sounded like this. "Starbucks, Starbucks, you can't hide! Not till we free Palestine! Starbucks, Starbucks, you can't hide!" Okay, what they're saying is, "Starbucks, Starbucks, you can't hide, not till we free Palestine." Now, when they talk about freeing Palestine, if you talk about the Gaza Strip, there has been no Israeli presence, no Jewish presence of any kind in Gaza since 2005. That's 19 years. And how has that Free Palestine been doing in those 19 years? I mean, what is it that has prevented Hamas from actually doing something to benefit the people who live in Palestine? Answer: the one thing that's prevented them is that what they care about is not the welfare of the people who live in the Gaza Strip, but developing their own military means of attacking Israel next door, which does not overlap with Gaza and hasn't for 19 years. In Chicago, there were Palestinian protesters. They're not Palestinian. Most of them, of course, are Americans who are on the extreme left, and they were blocking roads leading into O'Hare Airport. This is what that sounded like, clip five. Okay, it's not even comprehensible. And in New York City, a Hamas demonstrator lit an American flag on fire while another protester held a slogan reading, "Free Palestine or else." That sounded like this. Okay, there were also people waving the Hezbollah flag and chanting, "Death to America! Death to America!" None of this really advances any positive cause at all, does it? It appears that it's a very, very much a long shot. Speaking about a long shot, the polling indicates that convictions could actually hurt President Trump. If he's convicted in the hush money trial or any of the other upcoming trials. And part of it raises the question of President Trump has said repeatedly that he is being prosecuted and persecuted for the sake of the American people. What's fascinating to me, and I'd love to get some correspondence on it if you want to write to me, explain how these trials, particularly the hush money trial, is actually benefiting the American people in any way. We will be right back on the Medved Show. And on the Michael Medved Show, there is an additional commentary about a perspective on President Trump's hush money trial that I hadn't heard before. This says from Douglas Brinkley, who is a professor of history at Rice University, and he had a different perspective that he expressed on MSNBC. This is clip six.
I would warn anybody wanting to run to office, don't do what Donald Trump did. You know, nobody wants to end up in courtrooms with the world watching you for your, you know, crimes, being that an ignoble first in the club of American presidents. But Trump has been a one-off for a while. There are all the other presidents we've had, and then there's Donald Trump. And only Trump, because this is New York City, because of Trump Tower, that this was his milieu, he thinks he can manipulate the media spin of what's going on here because he's known it for so long. I'm not sure he's going to win the public relations battle, whatever's going on right now. It doesn't look good.
But you think Donald Trump's just a one-off, and so this situation is a one-off?
I think of Melania. I think of anybody who's married. Do you want your spouse to be having, you know, hush monies and dealing in the realm of pornography and you know, this continuation of gross misogyny or worse? No, I don't think that's a message that's how you succeed in politics. But Trump rode a wave on his personality. He's continuing to really right now fight for July 15th, Milwaukee.
And July 15th, Milwaukee is... the convention coming up. There, by the way, has been a proclamation by some of the pro-Hamas protesters that they are going to try to disrupt the Democratic Convention. And a lot of people have talked about the Democratic Convention in Chicago in 1968, where there was fighting in the streets. Would that be repeated between police officers in Milwaukee with the Democrats this year and the people who are trying to disrupt that convention and dismantle basically the Biden campaign? And there is one bit more. This from the world of business. Where the stock market did not suffer, have another very bad, very sour day as it has recently this week. But today there was new news about President Trump's media platform, Truth Social, and what happened with the issuance of thousands and thousands of shares of their stock. This is the Forbes senior editor Dan Alexander appearing on CNN.
It is a sad story, you know, and the trouble here is that if you look at the fundamentals of the company, it's poised to go down a lot more. If you look at the number of users that this company has, the amount of revenue that it generates, you know, its valuation should be measured in the hundreds of millions of dollars at the most. Right now, the public markets are valuing it at $3.5 billion. So that means that this stock should fall by at least another 90% before the metrics start to make any amount of sense. And for people who are just blindly putting their faith in Trump and in the company, that means that they could stand to lose a lot of money. And if somebody's just throwing a couple of, you know, $1,000 that they have extra, okay, fine. You know, people donate to political campaigns too. But if somebody's putting a significant chunk of their life savings into it, they could really get wiped out by the very person who they're trusting their money to saying this guy's going to make this company an amazing venture. I mean, if you look at the company's own filings, you know, they're saying that its accountants had questions about whether it could continue as a going concern. They're saying that bankruptcy is not out of the question eventually. So this thing could go to zero eventually.
That's another prospect coming up. And I mentioned the new massive New York Times Siena College poll. They report President Biden has nearly erased Donald J. Trump's early polling advantage amid signs that the Democratic base has begun to coalesce behind President Biden, despite lingering doubts about the direction of the country, the economy, and his age, according to a new survey by the New York Times and Siena College. Mr. Biden and Mr. Trump are now virtually tied, with Mr. Trump holding a 46% to 45% edge. That's, of course, within the margin of error. That is an improvement for Mr. Biden from this last February, when Mr. Trump had a much sturdier 48% to 41% lead just before he became the presumptive Republican nominee. Mr. Biden's tick upward appears to stem largely from his improved standing among traditional Democratic voters. He is winning a greater share of voters who supported him in 2020 than he did in February. Then Mr. Trump had secured the support of a lot more of his past voters compared with the president. Trump was getting 97% to 83% for President Biden. But that margin has narrowed. Mr. Biden is now winning 89% of his 2020 supporters compared with 94% for Mr. Trump. That difference, however, if that holds up, it would still mean a popular vote victory for Donald Trump. The one area where Mr. Biden has most dramatically improved has been among older people, who appear to be much less likely to hold Biden's age against him, which I guess makes sense. You have a lot of voters over 65, and maybe they're tired of hearing that somebody who is even older than they are, who is 81, is too old to serve as president. In terms of nostalgia, there's a new film that wants to appeal to nostalgia, particularly for the music of the past. It is called The Greatest Hits, now streaming and also in theaters. Check it out.
Now it's time for Medved's Entertainment Minute.
The rising British actress Lucy Boynton plays a California girl who's mourning the death of her boyfriend in a horrible traffic accident and travels back in time, if she listens to the right song, to talk with him before his death. Yes, it's confusing, but that's the setup for The Greatest Hits.
If something happened to you and I could stop it, but it would mean we would never meet, would you want me to?
Certain songs literally pull me back into the past.
Yeah, but in the present, she meets somebody new, played by Justin H. Min, who befriends her through their grief and mourning group. Though it's stocked with plenty of appealing performers, there's very little real romantic chemistry among any of these people, and the filmmakers seem more intensely romantic about the turntables and stereo speakers heavily featured in the movie than they do about any of the cardboard characters created by the script. 1.5 stars for the PG-13 groan-inducing snoozer, The Greatest Hits. And no, I think it is unlikely to be one of the greatest hits at the movie theaters. Speaking of great hits, there is the Trump trial. And in fact, the multiple Trump trials. Will he get to any others after the hush money verdict comes down? We'll talk about that with law professor John Yoo, one of America's leading conservative legal scholars.